next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast. Podcasting from the MyMac.com studios, it's your hosts, Tim Robertson and Chad Perry.
And this week it's just Guy Searle and myself as we have sent Chad Perry off on a clandestine meeting with Castro to try to get the last interview before the bearded one croaks.
Well, yeah, but if Castro dies, I think the world would be a sadder place.
Definitely. So anyways, how are you doing this week, Guy?
I'm doing really, really well.
I
am doing great.
We conducted an interview before we actually started the show with Dwayne McDuffie, and I'll drop that into the show a little bit later on. And for those
super guy,
yeah, a heck of a guy. For those wondering about the audio quality, I'm using much inferior equipment that I'm used to using, and thus it's going to suffer a little bit audio wise on at least my end. On your end, Guy, it's going to sound pretty much the same.
Yeah,
but my voice is not going to sound as good, and it's not just because of the equipment, it's also my voice is about shot. So,
well, it was that wonderful vacation you took, Tim.
Yeah, it's not even a vacation, it was just a weekend getaway. And I know I talked about it a little bit on the mini podcast, and boy, my voice has got worse since I recorded that podcast. Go figure.
Well, hopefully you won't suffer any permanent damage.
So the MacBooks were updated last week. We talked about that a little bit, and it seems to be hit or miss whether it actually fixed any problems for people or not.
There's been some talk that the firmware update for the MacBooks hasn't solved the problem for everyone, and hopefully Apple is going to take care of this and not just let it kind of hang on the vine, because they're starting to get some bad press over this.
Yeah, and that's something that Apple really can't afford right now, especially as the Christmas buying season is getting ready to kick into full swing now that Halloween is over.
Oh yeah, and as a matter of fact, one of the things that I wanted to talk about today was that there's been strong growth seen for the Mac just since, just over the last couple of months. According to something I read online from Net Applications, that the Macintosh has seen growth from 4.72% to 5.21% since September. Now, I'm assuming they're talking about the U.S. market. And there was another report by Gartner that shows increased market share now at 6.1%. And, of course, you can take all this with a grain of salt, but I don't think that there's any doubt that the Macintosh is starting to pick up some steam.
You know, I think the whole, number one, Apple really cares about profitability.
If
getting into profitability, which hasn't been a problem for Apple in a number of years now, means increasing their market share, great. But I don't think Apple is really all that concerned about increasing their market share. I think they're more concerned about keeping profitability way up.
Well, that could very well be, but as somebody over there at Microsoft once said, developers, developers, developers. You know, the more people you have using your platform, the more likely you are to bring on new developers and have new software available for the platform. And it's kind of a vicious circle, and as Apple found out in the 90s when, their market share dropped so far down that a lot of the developers abandoned the platform, and it was almost through the sheer will of Steve Jobs that the company kept going.
And here they are now, getting developers on the Mac platform doesn't seem to be a problem at all.
No, it doesn't at all. And, the few people that aren't interested at this time in developing for the Mac, well, okay, we've got Bootcamp. We have Parallels. You can do it off Windows if you want.
Yeah, unfortunately. I don't know if that's for games, I see Parallels and Bootcamp and whatever else Apple's got up their sleeves as far as Windows compatibility. I think the Mac gaming market is probably the one negative side of it all. I don't see game developers wanting to sink money into 3 or 4 months in converting a PC software game into a Mac software game. Why should they? Why would they?
Well, you know, and that was definitely true when Apple was still on the PowerPC, but you know, now that they're both on Intel, it's probably going to be a little bit easier, even though the APIs and, you know, things along those lines are different. I just think that Mac gaming, you know, and it's kind of like, you know, we're kind of the same mind where it's not really that important to us because, you know, you've got your Xbox and I've got my PS2 and blah, blah, blah. The few games that I play on the Mac, just, you know, they're typically older type games. They're not even new games.
Right. Yeah. We talked about that before too, that
yeah.
On the Mac, I don't know. It just, the best games right now are on consoles. They're not on computers as far as I'm concerned. I know a lot of, World of Warcraft people would disagree with that.
Yeah.
But
who wants to see, you know, as much as I enjoy gaming, I'm not interested in paying a monthly fee to go up against other people online.
No.
It just, and I'll admit it, even though Dwayne wouldn't say how old he was, you know, I'm 46 years old. I got two kids. I've got a job that kind of keeps me hopping. And when I sit down at my computer, I'm really not thinking about playing games. I'm thinking about firing up LiveType or you know, something in the iLife suite.
And you're probably a lot like me that when you do get to play games, you probably get to maybe 15 to a half hour tops, and that's it. I mean,
yeah, that is pretty much it.
And a game like World of Warcraft really demands that you sit in front of your computer for a couple of hours to get through a quest, and that's really not an option for people like us.
No, it's not. And, you know, let's take a guess on the average age of people that do play, you know, spend a lot of time online playing games. I'm guessing, you know, late teens, early 20s, because once you get much past that, you know, hey, life is hitting you in the face and you got stuff to do.
Yeah, but then again, you read these horror stories where they're the World of Warcraft widows, where the spouse is spending so much time playing games that they're ignoring their family. Which,
you know, if it wasn't games, it would be football or hockey or, yeah, you know, porn or God knows what. It would be something else if it wasn't World of Warcraft or Doom or Quake or, you know, whatever it is that they're playing online.
Apple posted a free demo of Aperture 1.5. You can try it for 30 days now.
I didn't know that.
Yep, just came out today. So if anybody out there is looking to give Aperture a drive, yeah, 30 days, if you can't figure out if you need it and want it within 30 days, then you probably...
is that... I take it that's universal binary, or is that Intel only?
No, okay. I think that's a universal binary program. So, you know, you get a serial number that works for 30 days, and if you want to buy it, they'll send you a new serial number. So I love demo software. I cannot stand software that you cannot download and try before you buy.
Yeah, that's, you know, and we were, you know, talking about games. A lot of the Mac gaming companies offer just that. Freeverse software, most of their stuff is available on a demo basis. And, you know, the stuff that they have that I've demoed is, you know, especially like the silly card games where, you know, I'm sitting, you know, typically when I break for lunch from work, there's this little place that I go to where, you know, somebody is foolishly left their wireless wide open. So I'll sit there and I'll check my email and eat my lunch. And if I have time, I'll fire. Oh my
goodness.
Excuse me. I'm dying. I'll fire up a game of hearts or euchre or spades or something like that from, you know, good old Freeverse and their little monkey symbol.
You know, here's the thing. I think that a lot of the companies that don't release demo copies are just simply worried about piracy, and while that's a legitimate concern, I think that letting someone try before you buy is going to allow you to cultivate many more customers in the long run.
Yeah, I would tend to agree, and also, you know, a lot of it depends on how you set up the demo. For some companies, they'll have a limited number of times that you can fire it up before it just stops working.
Right. Then again, there's some software like Adobe Photoshop that would take a long time to download as a demo. But, you know, Adobe used to provide demo software of Photoshop. I had a demo version for years. I didn't use it for years, but I mean, I had
it. What version was it?
I want to go back to version 4 or 5. I mean, it's been a while. But
how long would something like that take to download? Was that when you were still on a modem?
Well, it would come on in magazine subscriptions and stuff like
that. Oh, right.
And I think that's a huge market that not everybody today is still on high-speed bandwidth connections. Obviously, you know, anybody listening to the show, I'm sure they have a high-speed
most
connection.
Most of them, yeah. Speaking of magazines, have you heard what's going on with Mac Addict?
Yes, yeah, and I have, and I'm aware of the controversy as well. Do you want to fill the audience in on what's going
yeah,
on?
Yeah, well, basically, Mac Addict has decided that they're going to change their name to Mac Life because they don't want to associate their magazine anymore with the kind of in-your-face
fanaticism
style of journalism that they were doing before. And oddly enough, if you go to the Mac Addict page, there's a big splash there about them changing their name to Mac Life. And at the very bottom of the page, there's a little link there that says, if you were looking for the Boise, Idaho Mac Life store, click here.
Yeah, and if you do click there and you go to that store, there's also a link, if you're looking for Mac Link, go here. But that's really not the controversy.
Oh, well, fill me in.
The controversy is there's a long-running internet radio show, which we would call a podcast now.
Oh, right, called right. I'd forgotten about that.
Your Mac Life.
Your Mac Life.
With Sean King. And Sean's not really pleased, at least the last few posts that I read from him. I'll be honest, I don't listen to his show anymore. I just don't have the time. I used to listen all the time, and Sean King was a good friend of mine for a while. We just kind of fell out of touch as, you know, things happen. But he really wasn't pleased when they changed their name to Mac Life. And it's not that, well, some people could say, well, maybe they just didn't know about it. Yeah, they did know about them.
Oh, come on. Of course they did.
Well, he worked with them before in the past. So there's no, and I don't, if a magazine came out today and changed their, if Macworld decided, okay, we're not going to be Macworld, we're going to be My Macworld. I might be a little upset about that.
Yeah, I would be. I'd be looking for a lawyer. And chances are, you know, if Sean, I don't know how strongly Sean feels about it. He may want to consider it. You know, plus also, I find it. I'm just kind of wondering how, because I've been to that Mac Life store in Boise, Idaho. I actually blogged about it.
I remember.
And I'm just kind of wondering what deal, if any, they made with Mac Addict. Because I mean, I just found it very, very odd that there was the link down there at the bottom for the Mac Life store.
But one's a magazine and one's a store, and I think they would complement each other if nothing else. Whereas Sean King's is a content provider, and so is the magazine. So there could be some confusion between the two there.
Well, does he have is his website My Mac Life or Your Mac Life?
Your Mac Life. Yep. So
okay,
we'll see how that. I'm going to keep an eye on that.
See how that plays out.
Right. I don't know if did you read the story up at Newsday about how iTunes saved The Office, the American television show.
Yeah, I did see a little blurb on that. I didn't follow that all the way through though.
It's really the first time that an online outlet such as iTunes resurrected something that was on the verge of being canceled.
Canceled, right.
And here's a show that is a huge success now. And then it really owes that huge success to Apple and iTunes. And obviously the users that were downloading and watching the show. But that's why The Office is still on the air today, is because it was such a huge hit on iTunes that people were spending 99 cents per episode. And it made a huge splash, and NBC went, whoa, hey, wait a minute. And I think this is a good thing for us in that there's a lot of shows that get canceled, and we get really upset about
quickly.
It. Yes.
Right.
Way too quickly. Shows need time to develop and to find their audience. Like last year, I loved Surface. I thought it was the best new show on television last year. It's gone this year. So I was very disappointed. Well,
another one that I can think of off the top of my head that would have benefited from something like this would have been Firefly.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, Firefly was probably a couple years ahead of its time. Had Firefly come out now, and was on the verge of cancellation, and it was in iTunes, it would probably be a huge download, and it would have saved the show.
Yep, I would agree. I had never really had a chance to watch it myself at the time. I can't remember exactly. I think it was on mostly on Wednesday nights at the same time that I was at
Fox sabotaged martial arts class. Fox sabotaged the show right from the beginning. They never showed the first episode, which
and didn't they also show
up.
It out of order?
Yes, they did. So Fox sabotaged it big time through incompetence, if nothing else. So here's an idea for you. Does iTunes, obviously with the success of The Office, it's been proven that an online distribution method can save a current show, one that's maybe canceled, but what about content, television shows for iTunes exclusively? Do you think something like that could be in the works eventually?
Yeah, that could work, because let's face it, online content and content on demand is where the industry is going. Kind of like, I've said this before talking about AM and FM radio. This is a delivery system that it's not slowly dying, it's quickly dying.
Yep.
And satellite radio probably won't be far behind. And it's mostly because it isn't content on demand. Why are podcasts so popular? Content on demand. Why are things like, Battlestar Galactica is getting snapped up on iTunes quite a bit, along with The Office and some of these others. The only kind of negative that I can see along those lines is unless whoever is making the show is at the same time advertising it through other means, a lot of people might not even know it's there. They might get lost in the shuffle.
That's true. But then again, that's why podcasting is here, to advertise those shows, if those companies would just throw some advertising dollars our way.
And MyMac.com is more than willing to accept your advertising.
Absolutely. Here's another thing about iTunes. It was recently updated, and I guess there was a lot of problems.
Yeah. Did you? If for the people that regularly go to the MyMac.com site over on the blog side, Donnie, our very own beloved Donnie Yankolo, was apparently suddenly a citizen of Germany and Switzerland and some other place whose language he couldn't even figure out. And it was right after he upgraded to 7.02, the newest version of iTunes. Now, I upgraded as well, and I didn't have that problem. I don't know if it was because, I'm lucky or...
Well, Robert Hazelrig sent an email out asking pretty much the same question, because it changed nation he was in as well. And so it looks like it was a pretty serious bug that sounds like it was easy to fix, but it was strange nonetheless.
Yeah. Why don't you tell them how they can fix it in case they don't know?
I don't know.
Oh, you don't know?
I don't know.
I'm sorry. I thought you knew.
No.
What I've read online is all you really need to do is you make an attempt to log in using your iTunes account name and password, and it'll come out and it'll tell you, well, okay, this screen name and password isn't good for this store. Would you like to try somewhere else? And then you'll get a chance to switch to the American or whatever country you're listening to iTunes store. And once you've done that, I guess everything is kind of reset back to normal and you're okay again.
I haven't updated to iTunes 7.02, which is the update that we're talking about. And I'm kind of glad I haven't yet. Usually I like to wait to make sure these bug fixes don't introduce new bugs, and it looks like this time it did. Up on the MyMac.com website, right underneath this podcast is Apple should snicker license to Dell, and that's an article by our very own Guy Searle.
Yeah, I wrote that in, it was a relatively long article, but I was kind of passionate about it, and I wrote that in probably less than an hour and a half. I mean, my fingers were flying across the keyboard, and because I was an owner of some of the clone machines back in the 90s. I had a UMAX C600 that I was very, very fond of, and I also had an M-Power 604 tower, which was based on Motorola's StarMax design that was an absolute piece of crap. But I started thinking about that, and I had remembered hearing about the CHRP initiatives and the PREP initiatives, And I basically wikied them and you know, got some background information on it. And it just seemed to fly. And if you were going to ask me my opinion on whether Apple should let other people make their machines, I would say with their current model, no, that they probably shouldn't, because Apple can't compete with these small Asian manufacturers. The only way that it would work at all, Apple would have to completely leave the hardware business.
And that's against the grain of Apple, and I've said this before. In fact, I said it on the last podcast, Apple is first and foremost a hardware company.
Yes, they are.
And they make the software to work on their hardware, and that's where their money's coming from. And if you look at the financials of Apple over the last few years, they're obviously doing something right, be it the Mac line or the iPod line. They're doing something right. So,
well, I mean, we've hit on the iPod, the so-called iPod halo effect, a couple of times. And to be honest, you know, all the iPod really did was get the Apple name back out there associated with a good product. And as far as the Mac goes, you know, I mean, how much of, and you know, I guess we've talked about this as well before too, how much of it is people saying, oh, I've got an iPod and I like it, so I'm going to buy a Mac, which I sincerely doubt. And how much of it is, I'm just so tired of all this Windows crap.
Yeah, I think it's probably the latter.
Yeah, I would agree.
People are just sick of dealing with the crap that
we're not talking about guys that can go into Windows registry files and clean up all this nonsense.
No,
we're
because
talking
I think
about,
they actually enjoy it. I think they yeah, feel like well, they're being they do. Productive.
When, yeah, when well, it makes them opposite. Feel, it makes them feel, parentheses, special.
Yes.
But it's more along the lines of the average user that just wants to get their email, just wants to surf the web, you know, just wants to have a pleasant experience when they turn the computer on. And Windows used to give them that experience back in the late 90s, early 2000s, before this just explosion of adware and spyware and malware and keystroke bloggers and all the rest of it. And that's not to say that Apple is completely immune to these things, because they aren't. There's bugs and there's you know, openings in Mac OS X that haven't been discovered yet or known, and nobody's done anything with them. You know, Apple isn't perfect, and you know, yeah, this is a Macintosh advocacy podcast, but I think pretty much anyone who writes for mymac.com would agree Apple isn't perfect. You know, we're not these friggin' moronic fanboys that sit there with, you know, with little antennas on their heads saying Apple can do no wrong, because we know that that's not true.
Adobe released a new program called Sound Booth. It basically lets you edit audio quickly, cleans up some noisy audio, visually identifying and removing unwanted sounds, recording and polishing voiceovers, adding special effects and filters. It sounds like a neat little program, but there's only one problem with it if you're a Mac user. It's Intel Mac only.
Yeah.
This is Do you think this is a dangerous precedent that already, I mean, for all the Macs that are out there in the wild right now, I would hazard a guess that less than 5% are the Intel Macs, because they haven't even been available for an entire year yet. We have to wait till January, and that will mark the 1 year anniversary when Apple released the first Intel Mac, the iMac.
Yeah, it doesn't really surprise me at all that Adobe isn't going to allow for Sound Booth to be run on PowerPC machines. You know, even though Apple hasn't had the Intel machines out for that long, the writing's on the wall. The PowerPC is dead. It's not going to come back. Apple's never going to release any more machines with the PowerPC, especially, you know, the G4, G5 line. And they're looking to move on. So Adobe not releasing Sound Booth as a PowerPC universal binary doesn't surprise me in the least.
Do you think it's a valid argument for our current Mac users to feel like Apple's already abandoning them? I mean, if you bought a Power Mac G5 in December of 2005, less than a year ago, and all of a sudden, oh, look, you're just getting left behind already. Do you think that's a valid concern for Mac users, or do you think it's a little overblown at this point?
For right now, I think it's still a little overblown. We know that 10.5 is going to work with PowerPCs. I think we can pretty much assume that 10.6 will as well. So we're probably looking at, you know, 2-3 years down the line before you won't be able to get software from Apple that'll work on a PowerPC machine. And by that time, you know, I mean, I don't own an Intel Mac. So, you know, my machines are essentially 3 to 4 years old. They're PowerPCs. And certainly before 3 to 4 years go by, I plan on having an Intel Mac or two.
Yeah, I can pretty much guarantee you will. Well, the rest of the show is going to be our interview with Dwayne McDuffie. We really
did. And it was a great interview.
Yep, and we appreciated him coming on. I know a lot of you probably don't know who he is. After this interview, you're probably going to want to go out and pick up some of his stuff and keep your eyes peeled to the television screens to see when you see his name and go, hey, I heard an interview with that guy.
Yeah, I know. I pick up like animation season collections all the time. I know I'm going to be looking for the Justice League season 2.
Yeah, it's Justice League season 2 and Justice League Unlimited season 1 just came out. So Dwayne McDuffie's name is definitely out there. Next week, we're not quite sure what we're doing for the podcast because, well,
I'm not sure. Nothing planned.
Yeah, nothing planned. Actually, we do have a really big plan that doesn't involve Guy, unfortunately, because he's in Virginia. And we're here.
I'm in Virginia.
Yeah, we're in West Michigan. Chad and I. Chad will be back next week, and Chad and I are going back up to the Apple Store where we celebrated our 100th podcast. Boy, you know, that's only 6 episodes ago. That seems like it was longer in some respects. But
well, probably just because, you know, that whole experience kind of led to me being a semi-regular
co-host.
Like, almost, yeah.
Yep.
Right here on the main podcast.
Well, you know what and, we could try to do, Guy? We're going to be recording. No, you on Wednesdays, you're booked up, aren't you?
Yeah, that's my Taekwondo night.
Yeah,
bummer. From 7 to 8.
I was going to suggest that maybe you could be standing by and we could bring you in and show the audience how that happens live in Grand Rapids. But
well, what time is that going
to
be?
6 to 8 Eastern Standard. So that's
that's going to be really tough. There.
Yeah,
it's yeah, because no I pick up my kids at 6, and then I have to be at the Dojang at 7. So I don't think that's gonna work.
Well,
it's too bad.
Chad and I, if anybody is in the West Michigan area, will be 6 to 8 next Wednesday, November 8th. We're doing a podcasting clinic, a podcasting workshop, if you will. And we have absolutely no plans on what we're going to show. I think we're basically going to go through how we can set up a show, how we set up a show and how we record them and the equipment that we're using, how we do it in GarageBand. So if you're interested and you're in the area, stop on by, say hi to us. That may actually be our podcast for next week. So
yeah. And don't forget, that's the Grand Rapids, Michigan Apple Store at the Woodland Mall.
Yep, that guy.
And they've got really, really good people there.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, I am.
I'm looking forward to
seeing Lori.
Yeah, seeing Lori, and it's really nice guys up there in the Apple Store. Hopefully, Paxton will be there. He was a nice guy.
Yep.
So hopefully, we'll see a lot of people up there. This podcast was sponsored by SmallDog.com. If you need iPods
and Innotech.com.
Yep, Innotech.com is the hosting service for MyMac.com. Anything else before we jump to the interview, Guy, that you can think of that we really need to cover before we get out of here?
No, I think we're pretty good.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on and not just being a guest co-host, the actual co-host today with me. It was
and Chad, if you're listening, we missed you, buddy.
Yeah, definitely.
Come back.
We'll come back, Chad. We'll look forward to a show. Either 107 will be recorded at the Apple Store or I don't know. Maybe Chad and I will do a special podcast from my Suburban on the way up or back.
Well, you can just kind of drop it in with some of the stuff that you did at the store and just do like a midweek show.
Yeah, like kind of what we did at 100.
Kind right.
of mix mash and having a little fun.
Yeah. There's one other thing I wanted to ask you. Are you going to have the last part of our three-way conversation when I was in Grand Rapids on the next mini?
Yes, we sure will.
Ah. I think that's probably the last of it, isn't it?
Yeah, that should be about the last of it. It's difficult deciding where I'm going to edit it.
And to do the cut.
And do the cut. Because we rambled so much in one topic.
We were all over the map at that one.
You know, it's fun listening to it back now because it's been, almost 2 months ago at this point. And listening to that back, it's, you could see the beginning of the new podcast team.
And, yeah.
I do want to make it clear to everybody listening. I did get a couple emails asking if Guy is now the regular. Yeah, he is. Chan and I really enjoy having Guy on the show. We think,
it is such a blast to be doing it.
Obviously, we all have busy and normal lives outside of the podcasting and my Mac realm, so not all of us can always be here. But and there may come a time where I can't, and you and Chad will have to do the podcast.
Oh, that would be interesting.
I would look forward to hearing that one. That would be fun.
So, if only because you didn't have to do it.
Yeah. You know what? There was one other thing, and it's the iPod Shuffles came out. This week, the new iPod Shuffles.
Oh, you're right. And I had just been looking at something about that. They had actually had delayed it once before, I believe, hadn't they?
They sure did. So I guess they were just having
trouble getting them. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I have no reason to buy one myself, but they look pretty cool to me.
Well, the Shuffle is the kind of iPod you want if you're at the gym or you're a jogger or something like that, and the kind of exercise I do, if I'm sitting there listening to music, I'm gonna get seriously hurt, or at least even more hurt than I usually am after a Taekwondo workout. And you look at it, it's like the size of the damn FM remote that they had. They had for the fifth gen.
Yeah, it looks like a regular Shuffle that they cut off everything below the control wheel. They just snipped it right there and called it good.
And then threw it at somebody.
It's amazingly small. Do you remember Dan from Podcast 100? He came out and joined us at the show. He won something, and he came with us to the restaurant afterwards.
Yes, I do.
Dan Rodriguez. He actually sent me some pictures of unpacking his iPod Shuffle. And
Really?
Yep, I'm going to post that up on the blog side before the week's end. And
cool.
I wanted to thank Dan for sending me those pictures. Very, very cool. It's neat.
And it was great of him to take all the pictures at the podcast as well.
Oh, that wasn't Dan. That was Rick. Rick took
the pictures. Oh, you're right. Oh, God.
You're mixing people up again, aren't you?
Well, yeah. Well, I won't give the usual excuse. Everybody knows what it is.
Before Guy and I, before I lose my voice completely, and Guy finishes losing his mind, we're out of here. And listen to the interview with Dwayne, and we'll see you guys in some form or another next week.
Hey, have a good one, everybody.
Bye-bye. And today we're joined by writer Dwayne McDuffie. Hi, Dwayne.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Doing great. We appreciate you coming on the show. And,
sure do.
Let's start off by establishing your Mac credentials, if you will.
Well, let's see. My first Mac I got in 1986, and I've pretty much had one ever since. I've always used them.
It was 1986, what kind was it?
Oh, geez. It wasn't an SE yet. What was before that?
The Mac Plus.
Okay, Mac Plus.
Yeah, that was the first one I had. I picked it up in 87.
Well, I have very fond memories of buying the Mac bottom, external hard drive for it.
Right.
And I think it was 250 or maybe 500 meg. And I remember distinctly thinking, I will never need to buy storage again.
Right.
I think everybody said that at one time or another with their computer, and then a year or two later, you're like, wow, I need something bigger now.
Hey, I'm doing that for real right now. I got a MacBook Pro, a 17-inch, and I just pretty much filled my hard drive, so I'm about to see what I can get bigger for this.
So how often are you upgrading your Macs now? Are you on a yearly basis, or do you try to hold out every 2 years?
I kind of buy them more than I need to. It's just at a certain point, the technology seems cool to me, and I have to get one. Is that audible?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay.
Here's a question for you. Now, you're coming from the entertainment industry, and we'll get into all that in a minute. But how prevalent are Macs in the entertainment industry? I mean, how often do you see them?
I see them pretty often. Certainly more often than in the general world. I think there's a tendency for creative people to use them. I worked in comics for a long time. It's probably 75% Macs. I work in TV now. It's pretty close to 50-50.
I'm sorry, where did you say you were working now?
I'm working in television.
Okay. Can you hear him, Guy?
Yeah, he's breaking up for me quite a bit. Can you hear him all right, Tim?
I can hear him fine and soaking in the audience, and that's all that matters.
Okay. Then I'll try to be more quiet.
So you got your start as a writer where?
My first credit was at Marvel Comics. I made up a comic book called Damage Control, which was about a group of insurance and engineering people who cleaned up after the fights.
That's a good concept.
And go ahead.
Well, I was going to say Damage Control is actually pretty current in the Wolverine issues right now.
Yeah, I was really surprised to see him back. It was kind of fun. I hope Wolverine doesn't kill him, because about 15 years ago, I had him get hit in the face with a pie by Damage Control, so this may be revenge.
Well, are you still working in comics, or have you moved on?
I had moved on, but I've moved back in recently. Right now I've got a series out with Marvel called Beyond, and I'm taking over the Fantastic Four with the issue after next. So,
wow, the Fantastic Four, the comics first family.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, my favorite comic book when I was a little kid, I couldn't turn it down.
You know, here's my question. When you come at a comic book from the Fantastic Four, for instance, do you concentrate more on the villains or the heroes?
I kind of think about the family. You know, they're not really a super team. Like, you know, they're not the Avengers or the Justice League where they've made all these. You know, they're a family, and they kind of get involved in stuff as a family. So you sort of have to start with the family relationships. But heroes are only as good as their villains, so you kind of have to step up with the villains too. So both. How's that for straddling the fence?
That's a good answer. Now you've done a lot of different stuff over the years. Besides working for Marvel and DC, I see in your bio that you also worked for Harvey and Archie Comics.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I worked did a few different comics for Harvey. I did, Back to the Future. I did Ultraman. I did the artist once again known as Prince.
did you get to work with Prince at all, or did you get to meet him?
Contractually, I did not.
Oh, it was part of the contract? I don't want to meet any comic book people.
Well, actually, he was really cool. He was very, very creative, and he's really into comics, knew his stuff.
I didn't know that. Now, you also started Milestone Media. Can you explain that a little bit?
Sure. I got together with three other friends and associates who wanted to sort of control the kind of who wanted to creatively control the characters we created. And one of the big issues for us was that most of the big comic book characters were created in the 50s and the 40s and the 30s. And as a result, they tend to all be white guys. And the world doesn't look like that anymore.
No, it doesn't.
So we I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I blame white media.
Well, I don't. I think what you've got is you've got a bunch of characters that have been around for 50 years.
Yeah.
And exactly. That's what they were. That's what it was back then. But if you kind of look around the world, you see all kinds of different people, and we tried to create heroes from many different colors, many different cultures, different religions, you know, sort of a different socioeconomic standing, and just present a broader, a more diverse world. And it worked out pretty well for us.
So out of Milestone Media and the comic book line, Static got his own cartoon series. How did that happen?
Boy, if I knew, I'd do it again. I just kind of got a phone call one day that Warner Brothers was interested in doing a cartoon about one of our shows. about one of our comics, and I kind of went, yeah, yeah, because, you know, people buy the rights to stuff all the time, and right. It really means nothing. They never, you know, I mean, stuff gets bought all the time. I've got like four or five things that have been optioned right now. None of them are going to be anything, so I thought this was another one of those. They called me back 4 months later and said, and made a solid offer, and there we were.
Well, how much control did you have over the series?
Not a whole bunch, but the people who were behind the series, the TV production people, were the same people who did the sort of seminal Batman cartoon of the early 90s. And right, those guys love comics, and they love the character, and I think they did a great job of adapting it. And I ended up doing a lot of work on the show later, but they pretty much put the show together. It was put together when
now,
I came out here.
Was that also with Bruce Timm and some of those guys?
Bruce wasn't on it, but Alan Burnett, who wrote, you know, much of the Batman shows and Superman and
two
Batman
great shows,
Beyond.
By the way.
Yeah, they really are terrific. But
go ahead.
It was. I'm sorry. You said it was.
Oh no, I was just saying that those two shows, the first Batman animated series and the Superman series that followed soon after that, really kind of caused a revival in, you know, what people considered Saturday morning cartoons, where you could have well-written, well-defined characters and, you know, keep an audience for them. And the animation, compared to so much of the other just garbage that was out there at the time, it just blew me away.
Well, it was just an amazing team of people. It was great writing, you know, great art, great direction, great music. They treated the audience seriously, which isn't to say that, you know, which isn't to say that the shows weren't funny, but they treated the audience as if they were intelligent, and the audience responded.
Well, you know, go ahead.
Oh, I'm just saying that those same people did Static, and that sort of led to me getting work on Justice League, and I ended up producing the last few seasons of Justice League, which is a great experience.
Now, what does that mean exactly when you were the producer? What was your role?
Well, there's a lot of different jobs that go under producer. My job was story. So what I did was I helped pick writers. I worked with writers to get their scripts in shape. I prepared the script so that the next guy in line was ready to do his job.
So if I want to break into the business, you're the person I should talk to. Now the reason that I came to know Dwayne was kind of funny. I was actually looking for some back issues. I used to say I'm a comic book collector, but I'm not really. I'm a comic book reader. And I sold my original collection. And one of the first titles that I was putting together was a series that I really, really enjoyed called Icon.
Oh, yeah.
And that led me to Dwayne's website, which I saw immediately said Made on a Mac. And I emailed him, and we communicated quite a few times. I don't remember how it led to it, but Dwayne actually did a review of Go Live version 3.0 for MyMac.com.
Which I very much approved of.
Yeah, you did. It was a good review, too. So it's kind of funny how that worked out that I happen to be looking for a comic book and you end up doing a review for MyMac.com. I'm not sure how I finagled you into that. But
well, you know, Dwayne, I'm quite a big comic book collector myself. I've got probably close to 60 long boxes spread out all over the house at the moment.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm serious.
Okay, you should know that you have more comic books than I do.
Well, you know, I kind of got into it a little bit when I was living in Florida in the 70s, but then when I moved up to the north and started getting a little more serious in the mid-80s was when you had, you know, the big explosion with Pacifico and Comico and First Comics and some of them. And
oh, sure.
Looking at now, how old are you?
Oh, come on.
Oh, come on. I'm 46. Don't feel bad. Okay.
Yeah. So moving on. Do you know what business I work in? If they find out how old I am, I'll never get another job.
I'll never get a job.
Now I've noticed through your bio that you've been preceded
and
succeeded
no doing
by
math.
No math. Who else in the industry? I noticed that for the Legends of the Dark Knight that you had, you took it over from Mike Baron. Did you get a chance to meet any of these other guys that are so well known in the industry?
Well, you don't meet guys that way. It's like I've met pretty much everybody in the business, at least most people. But you don't meet the guy who works on the book before you, because when I wrote Legends of the Dark Knight, I lived in California. And I don't even, you know, I don't even know where the guy before me lives. But, you know, you tend to meet each other at the conventions. And right. I was an editor for many years. So I've met a lot of guys when they came to the office, you know, back in the day.
Probably usually ticked off that you had edited something that they liked.
That could be.
Well, here's my question. How has the internet, email, and Max in general, how has that changed both the entertainment industry, the television side, and the comic book side?
Well, the comic book side, I don't know, because by the time I started on the entertainment side, on the TV side, the stuff was all there. The technology was just there already. Comics, I watched it happen. I'm pretty sure I'm the reason. I'm pretty sure that I bought the first Mac that Marvel Comics ever owned to do production. You know, I wanted them to buy me a Mac, and they wouldn't. And then I convinced them to buy a Mac to do production on the first set of Marvel trading cards.
Right.
Which was just totally a lie. Didn't need it. But
hey, whatever works, Dwayne.
But I did do those cards on a Mac. So, you know, I've watched it, you know, I've watched it typesetting completely go out because of computers. Oh, yeah. The last comic book, the computer colors completely revolutionized the look of the stuff. It's so much more sophisticated than we ever thought it would be when I first started.
Well, plus it probably speeds up the process quite a bit as well.
Well, you know what, though? The amount of work that you do on something tends to increase with the amount of time that you have. So as technology speeds it up, yeah, you can do stuff faster, which means you have more time, so you do more stuff. I don't know if it really, but it does, it's pretty much ended the dependence on FedEx. I just did a book, this book Beyond I'm doing now, I just did with an artist who I never met.
Now, did you write Beyond?
Yeah, I wrote it, and he drew it. And he would send his pencils an email, and I'd look at the pencils and make whatever notes I had. And then he finished the stuff up on his computer, and you know he uploads it to Marvel's server, and that's how they get the art. They never touch the pages.
Now I had I've been collecting Beyond. I have been getting that book, and is that kind of a retelling of the Secret Wars?
Oh, absolutely. It's not a retelling. It's actually a sequel. It's a direct sequel, and if you hang on till the last issue, you'll see how it's a sequel.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to get back to it. Usually, I usually get my books about once a month, and I've missed like the last 2 months, so I had I've got 3 months of books that I'm personally going through at the moment, so it'll take me a while to catch up.
So where do you see yourself, Dwayne? Do you see yourself more as a comic guy still, or a TV guy that's coming back to comics temporarily? Where do you see yourself in a few years?
You know what? I'm just a writer, so I'll write for whoever wants to let me tell stories. You know, I've done comics for years. I've done this animation. I just did a video game. You know, it's like that. Whatever medium seems interesting, you know, I'll write for that.
Do you prefer to write your own stories, i.e., a comic like Icon, or would you rather prefer to write the Fantastic Four?
Well, this kind of different sides of you. You know, the side of me that's still 12 years old, like, would rather write Fantastic Four because that's what comic books were when I was 12. You know, that the part of me that wants to tell. I'm sorry?
I was going to say, you know, writing a book that's considered a legend.
Yeah, exactly. But on the other hand, I really, in many ways, prefer writing my own characters and my own stories because it's a lot more, you know, it's a lot more personal. It's me.
Right.
Any chance of bringing back some of the milestone characters?
We're always trying to figure out how to do it. We haven't quite figured out how to do it yet, but if there is a way, we will do it.
I thought Blood Syndicate was awesome. I loved Icon. Static Shock was always great. I couldn't believe that it ended when it did. It seemed like it was just really getting its second breath when it just went boop, gone.
Well, what year was that?
That was October 95. Was really bad for comics.
Yeah.
They called it Black October in the industry. Orders went down across the industry on everything. And we were just like a little bitty company. So there wasn't, we couldn't take much of a hit. We didn't lose money, but we saw where it was going, and we had to stop. We knew that eventually, the way I read it, that we had about 6 months before we would be in the red. So we tried to ramp down before it hit really hard, but a lot of companies went under right then.
Now, I know Milestone Media was the kind of the umbrella that you and the other creatives worked under, but do you actually own yourself any of the characters? Are they yours, or do they belong to Milestone?
Well, I own Milestone.
Okay.
And Milestone owns the character. No, that's a good question. I mean, I don't own the characters directly. I own the holding company that owns the characters.
Right, they're all creator-owned.
They're not all creator-owned, although I happen to be I'm the creator of a lot of them, but a number of the creators of them don't have any ownership in them.
So, like, if you wanted to take Icon or Blood Syndicate or Static Shock under, say, the Icon umbrella at Marvel, you would be able to do that.
Oh, you should get those guys a call.
Yeah, that's an idea.
You got a hookup there for me? within reason, yeah. Static Shock is really, really tied up with the TV show. But when that stuff was over, yeah, we could move on.
I think there's a minority type of characters now would probably be more popular than they were in the early and mid-90s when Milestone Comics was at its peak.
Yeah, maybe, although, you know, back then you had, the Image had a lot of characters. You know, you had Spawn and you had a Shadow Hawk and, you know, there was a little stuff, there's some stuff going on then.
Well, the people that are reading comics now really are different than they were at that time. There was a lot of people investing in comics. They were buying multiple issues. That's where the whole Black Sunday thing probably came from. The investors pulled out.
Well, not only that, but the whole, you know, and what really kind of kicked that off as far, what I kind of saw it coming with the Death of Superman fiasco, where people were buying 10 copies of it and then the next day trying to sell them through, you know, classified ads or whatever for $150 and such nonsense.
Well, again, there were a lot of speculators. There were people who did not read them. They would come into stores and buy cases of books and put them in the basement and figure out how much they were worth with the buyer's guide. And what happened was when those guys tried to sell them and found out they weren't worth anything, the whole thing crashed.
Yep. Right. My point being that the people that are into comic books right now are, for the most part, from what I'm seeing anyways, are readers.
Yep.
And that means the writers have more juice, I think, right now than ever before. They're more popular.
Well, I've noticed that. I have never, ever seen, at any time when I've been in comics, writers having the influence that they have now.
I think it's great for the industry, personally.
Well, plus, so much, you know, there was it, especially when you're talking about the mid-90s, there was a lot of stuff that was being put out, and I know you can't really say so, Dwayne, but I think Image was, you know, when they first started out, they were great. They had a limited number of books. It was all creator content, creator-owned content. And then it just seemed like they got a bad case of the gimmicks and everything had an embossed cover or they
heard that argument, but the problem with that argument is people were buying them. And if you're a business and people want shiny stuff on the cover, you're going to put shiny stuff on the cover. If people don't buy shiny stuff on the cover, you won't put shiny stuff on the cover.
Now that's true.
You know, it's kind of hard to think long term when you've only had, and you know, Image had only been around a couple years. They didn't know what to do. It's like you kind of answer, you go where the dollars are. And the whole industry was doing that stuff. You know, people were just, I don't understand why somebody needs two copies of the same comic. Except for the ones I write, which I do completely understand. you know, if one cover, if one cover has is different, if you've got two different covers, buy the cover that looks nicest to you. You know, it's
right.
But that's not what people did. They bought every variant, and then the company said, "Ooh, they want variants. We better do variants."
Now, my question for you now is, for any aspiring writers out there who wants to try to break in, it's pretty obvious what you do if you're an artist. You go to the conventions and you show someone, you know, four pages of the Hulk smashing up a city and some dialogue. But for a writer, it's much harder to break into the comic book industry. How does somebody go about even trying to break into the comic book industry?
Well, first thing I want to correct you is, for artists, don't put dialogue on it. Because what they want to see is your storytelling.
Right.
Don't do pinups. Do continuity. So, you know, do panels that are showing something happening, in a period of time. But don't do word balloons, because nobody who's looking at that cares about your word balloons. They want to see if you can tell a story.
Gotcha.
For writers, it's really, really tough. I can look at some pencil pages from somebody who hands them to me on the floor at a convention, or as has actually happened, handed me their portfolio because we were both in a comic store. And I can tell in about 5 minutes, you know, how close they are, or if they're already ready, or if they're really not even close to ready. But a script, I got to sit down and read it.
Right.
And
that's what I mean. It's so much more difficult for a writer to break in because it's
And not only is it not a five-minute process, but there's almost no reason for an editor to look at writing samples, because you have more writers than you need, and you don't need another average guy. You need a guy who's going to make a difference. You know, we already have, Tom DeFalco used to say, Marvel has all the average writers that they need. And if a guy comes in and he's as good as the middle of the pack, I don't care. I already have a middle of the pack.
Yeah.
You know, the thing
they're looking for the next big thing.
Yeah. They're looking for individual voices. They're looking for, they're looking for something they don't have already. And the best way to get people to look at it really is to get published somewhere else. If you want to, like, start working at Marvel or DC, it probably isn't going to happen unless you're a novelist or you've done something in another field, so you can show them that, like, I'm a professional in this field, and this is what I would do for you. And I don't even know if that's a good way of doing it, but it does make people know that you're a professional, you can get stuff done, you've worked with deadlines, you've worked with editors, you understand all that stuff. The best path, then, I think, is to publish your own comic. Find a guy, find somebody who can draw, you don't have to draw, find somebody who can, and get a book out there, because if somebody hands me a comic book, I'll read it.
What about guys that write for websites? What's their chance?
Named guy, perhaps?
Yeah, like, I know this guy.
Well, I mean, that's the other trick. It's like, if you've got something where you can get people talking to you, I'm trying to think of the stories of, like, big names who broke in recently. The one that I keep thinking about is Gail Simone, who's a writer who's doing a lot of stuff for DC now, and she's very good. People noticed her because she used to have an online column, a humor column, and she had this great trick that nobody had ever tried with an online comic book humor column. It was funny. And everybody noticed it. And everybody in the business would say, hey, did you see, I can't remember what her name was. That wasn't her real name. She was using it. But, have you seen Gail's new column? And people laughed and they talked about it. And then when she started pitching stuff, they already knew who she was.
She had
And that's a big, that gives you a big, big leg up. So if you can make your own comic, if you wrote a children's book, if you wrote, a best-selling novel, if you happen to have been the showrunner on a hit primetime TV show for several years, you know, you can kind of get them on the phone.
You got them in.
Just write. Just write.
Writers
and,
write.
And I've told people, I used to tell people all the time that I went into TV to get work in comics because it was a lot easier. I found it a lot easier to get work in television than I did to get work in comics, and I'm not kidding.
Now, if nobody has ever read anything that you've ever done, and that's probably going to be quite a few of our audience right now. What are you most proud of? What would you say? Go read this. This is who I am. This is what I'm about.
You know, probably the Icon trade paperback. Out of the stuff of mine that's like in print that you can get, that's the most like what I am. But I'm also really, really proud of I'm really proud of Fantastic Four that's coming up, and I think if you're a fan of Fantastic Four, that you'll be happy with where we're going. My TV stuff, my best TV stuff, just came out on DVD. It's called Justice League Unlimited Season 1.
Excellent.
And the back end of that is, in my opinion, the best season of Justice League. Like the last 13 episodes.
Was that the season that had the whole the alternate Justice League that had kind of taken over the planet?
No, that was actually the season before. That's an episode called A Better World, written by Sam Berkowitz. Which is a great episode. Now we picked up a lot of that.
That was a two-parter that was really good. And the one thing I could never figure out about that was, what did they do with those guys after they captured them at the end?
I don't think
they ever came back to it.
You don't want to know. We like to think nicely of the Justice League. No, they just dumped them back in their dimension with no powers, where everybody was mad at them.
So you were speaking about the episodes where the U.S. government basically becomes paranoid of the huge killer satellite above their heads.
Yeah, that's actually my favorite run of the series, and I just think that was a great season, and I'm so glad it's all on one disc.
You know, I watched that, and
One set anyway. I'm sorry.
Right, having watched that myself when they first aired, I haven't got the DVD set yet. I was sitting there looking at the credits, and I kept seeing your name, and I thought, knowing that you're. Obviously, I've been a reader of your stuff for a long time, but I kept thinking, you know, this is vintage Dwayne. This is, I could see this coming from him. And I thought, I have to agree, it was just excellent.
It was kind of cool. That's Bruce Timm's show. And it was very cool that he let me do what I do. You know, it's when you work on TV, you're always trying to turn your vision to someone else's vision. And, you know, Bruce's vision was large enough that there was plenty of room in that for me to do the kind of stuff I was really very interested in doing. And I'm just really happy with how it turned out.
Well, we want to say thanks for coming on, and we appreciate your time. And
good
luck with the Fantastic Four, Dwayne.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Thanks for having me. I'm going to go write more stuff on my Macintosh.
Well,
Dwayne.
If you're ever looking for a creative outlet, mymac.com has blogs. So
okay.
That's right.
You're always welcome to post anything you want, anytime you want.
Thanks a lot.
Check out DwayneMcDuffie.com. I'll put a link in the show notes for show 105. And thanks a lot.
Thanks for downloading the mymac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at mymac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to mymacpodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the mymac.com podcast.